Most of my stories and that pertain to the old place. I guess home's always home, even if you weren't there your whole life, you know. Where you started out, I guess, seems to be home. And the stories and that relate to up there because there were stories I heard my mother talk about and my father talk about, my aunts, my uncles, and all these people. And they were all referring to up there. So in my repertoire of stories and songs and that, well, I kind of talk about up there because that's where my heart is, I guess.
Up there, for Bill Smith, has always been close to Colton, a small village in the northwestern Adirondacks, where for several generations his family worked in the lumber woods and kept small farms to support a simple life. While his early years were spent in the woods, Bill more recently has become known around home and far beyond as a traditional ash splint basket maker, ballad singer, and storyteller. Welcome to Meet the Masters. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, your host for this series of conversations with traditional artists from the northern region of New York State, the North Country. Each individual or community group in the series has been acknowledged as masters of their art by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, an organization dedicated to the preservation and presentation of local folk culture. All these artists have been honored with the North Country Heritage Award and are well-known institutions in their own corners of the region, admired and respected for who they are and what they do.
I grew up in a place called a Featherbed, up about 3 miles up the road from here. The Featherbed was an old burn ground, and the old timers were pretty poor, you know, and didn't have a lot of money. And state, I guess, for quite a few years have been carrying on that program where they paid to fight fire, you know. And I guess back in those days, they probably paid 50 cents a day or something to fight fire or something like that. I'm not sure how much it was, but to them old-timers, it was money. And some of them old guys would go out Saturday night or something, get half soused and set the woods on fire, and the next day they had work. And they'd go down and fight fire. God help the guy that tried to put it out. They'd just keep it going, you know, until it burned itself out after year or two, whatever it took. And the Featherbed was one of them old burn grounds. And here in the Adirondacks, you know, that's all granite. And all the sphagnum and the roots and all that stuff all burned right down to the granite. And all them little trickles of water that run across them little spring veins, you know, water veins and that. Well, they kept the rock damp enough so that there was haircap moss and sphagnum moss and all that grew up about 8 inches deep. And it was kind of like laying on a feather tick, I guess, so they called it the Featherbed. And when I was a kid, of course, you know how succession works. All things keep moss, and then you got little shrubs and blueberries and that, and then brush and trees and so on, you know. Well, when I was a kid, it was at this blueberry stage, and people used to come there from all over New York State and pick blueberries. It's quite interesting. By that time, though, we had moved. Shortly after that, I guess, what I'm remembering anyway, we moved from up there down here to this farm next door, and then my father bought this farm here, and so I had part of my life up there and part of it down here.
Like many other men who lived in the harsh climate of the Adirondacks, Bill's father Roy needed a variety of skills to provide income for his family throughout the year.
He was a logger most of his life. He was like an Adirondacker. All Adirondackers have about 15 things that they do. He was a very good paper hanger, and he was very good at painting, house painting. Pretty good carpenter, could fix about anything that needed fixing. And he would hire out sometimes to summer people, you know, and fix up this or that that they needed fixed. And when he couldn't get a logging job somewhere or something, I've known him to go and hire out to some wealthier person and do their whole front room for them or their kitchen or whatever. And so he was pretty handy. But his heart was in the logging camps. He was a logger. And most of the time, that's what he did. But he had a lot of irons in the fire. He swapped horses, and he did all kinds of different stuff.
In those days, everybody around the Smiths traded with each other for what they needed. They would help each other with fieldwork or animals and exchange stove wood for horseshoeing or apples for cider. Families and neighbors would also share stories and songs when they could get together in their free time.
A feller by the name of Dick Law had a beautiful voice, a lovely voice, and played the guitar really well. And he used to come to the house and visit, because just next door, you know. And his brother married my sister. And so, I don't know, Dick sort of became family, you know. And him and his wife would come, and my brother-in-law and my sister, and they'd sing and that. One night, Dick left, and I said, you know, Ma, I think if I had one of them guitars, I could play that thing. She said, I think you could, too. And she never let on to me about anything, but I noticed that she was knitting quite a few more socks and mittens than usual, and I'd help her. And I don't know, my birthday was April, and long toward the, pretty near the middle of April, mailman stopped one day, and he leaned this triangular package up against the mailbox. My mother looked out. She said, the mailman's been here. He left a box out there. She said, it's a funny-looking box, kind of triangular-looking. She said, that might be for you, she said. I went running out, and sure enough, had my name right on it from Sears and Roebuck. I read what it said on it. Of course, it said there was a guitar inside, fragile and all that stuff. Jesus, I got that in the house. I couldn't get it in fast enough, you know, and ripped the box all off it. And there was one of them little guitars. I had an old covered wagon on it, painted on there, and oxen, and some guy with a whip heading west, it looked like. And there was a book in there, and a tuner that you blow through, and a couple of picks in there. So I got the book out and calculated on how to tune that thing, and got that figured out. And as luck would have it, at about that time, Lee Moore was doing a little program in the mornings on the radio, and he's giving little guitar lessons on the radio. That came in handy. And between the book and watching some of the guitar players at the square dances and listening to Lee Moore on the radio, I picked up a little bit I know about guitar playing, which isn't a whole lot, but it got me by.
The old songs were a great source of entertainment at home. While many in the Adirondacks learned to sing without accompaniment, some learned to play instruments and eventually to play for other people. The guitar was popular because it could be used solo, as backup for other musicians, or as accompaniment for singing songs. The Frozen Lager is one old song Bill learned at home, which he still performs today.
One night while I was seated down in a dim cafe, a 30-year-old waitress to me these words did say, I see that you're a logger and not just a common bum, for no one but a logger stirs his coffee with his thumb. My lover, he was a logger, and a good one, they say. Well, if you'd pour whiskey on it, he'd eat a bale of hay. He never shaved his whiskers from off his horny hide. Why, he'd drive them in with a hammer and just bite them off inside. One time,
and then I started playing at square dances when I was, I don't know, 12, 13 years old. And there's a couple old fiddle players around that was pretty interested in me. And one old feller was Stanley Carey. And of course, Stanley was a friend of the family. They'd known him for quite a few years. He used to come up to the house, and he had a friend, Buster Jessmer, that played too, and he played the guitar as well, and he sang. I learned a few square dance calls and whatever, and so they wanted to take me to some of the square dances. Of course, some of those places were pretty rowdy, you know. And my mother said, "Stanley, Kerry," she said, "you let one hair on that boy's head get hurt." She said, "You're going to answer to me, but you can take him. But," she said, "you keep track of him and don't you let anything happen to him." "Oh," he said, "Emily, I wouldn't let nothing happen to him, you know that." So we went. And one of the first places we played was up at the Wanakina Hotel. It's all gone now. Oh, God, what a rowdy place that was. And it was kind of funny. You'd probably play for an hour or so on Saturday nights, you know. And then the first thing you knew, a hell of a fight would start. Bottles would be flying and bloody noses and black eyes and all this sort of stuff and women screaming and all that business. And old Stanley, he would give me a shove and set down in behind these tables. He yanked these two tables up on edge and he'd say, "Now get down in there," he'd say. And I'd crawl in and he'd say, "Here, take this fiddle." He said, "I don't want nothing to happen to this fiddle." So he'd hand me the fiddle and the bow and I'd crawl under the table. And when the fight got a little close, you'd see Stanley come crawling in too. And, oh God, it's funnier now. And, that'd go on maybe for 20 minutes, half hour, depending on how long it took the sheriffs to get there. And the sheriffs would come, they'd grab up the guilty parties and throw a set of handcuffs on them and slip them out into the sheriff's car and head out for somewhere with them. Anyway, it wouldn't be more than another hour and a half, 2 hours. Another fight would start, and you go through the whole thing all over again, you know.
Bill Smith was the youngest in a family of 10 children. Because his father was a logger, he was away from home for days and weeks at a time in lumber camps. So Bill learned a great deal from his mother, Emily, with whom he spent a lot of time. Always a hard worker herself, she also had a variety of talents and interests which she passed on, including a love for music.
She's quite a person as far as I was concerned. She was always happy. Always had a tune in her mind of some sort. She played the mouth organ and she played the spoons. She played the old pump organ and we'd sit there at night. Of course, lonesome, you know. When you're the youngest of 10 kids, all your other brothers and sisters all go away eventually. And then your father's gone working off in the woods somewhere. Just leaves you there alone with your mother, you know. And we'd go upstairs and she had that old pump organ up there. She'd play that pump organ and I'd play the guitar. We'd sing like fools up there all by ourselves when the soul within a mile at that time wasn't a soul around, you know. And she always kind of told me that I could do anything that I ever wanted to do if I wanted to do it. Just go ahead and do it.
Bill still sings and plays many of the old songs that he learned from his mother. Here is one familiar to many as "Go Tell Aunt Rhody," but known in his own family by another name.
Go tell Aunt Nabby, go tell Aunt Nabby, go tell Aunt Nabby, the old gray goose is dead. The one she'd been saving, the one she'd been saving, the one she'd been saving to make a feather bed. Tell her it died happy, tell her it died happy, tell her it died happy beneath the old woodshed. Won't you run, tell Aunt Nabby, run, tell Aunt Nabby, run, tell Aunt Nabby, the old gray goose is dead. Thank you.
run.
Run tell Aunt Nabby, run tell Aunt Nabby, run tell Aunt Nabby, your old gray goose is dead.
You're listening to Meet the Masters. This program features Bill Smith, a traditional Adirondack musician and storyteller. I'm your host, Kathleen Fitzgerald. While storytelling was part of Smith family life at home, it was also a common practice in the North Country at the time. Barbershops, livery stables, country stores, and taverns were frequent gathering places on bad weather days or in the season off from work. Men might spend several hours a day exchanging news and telling big stories. A number of the men developed real reputations for storytelling in their communities. Sometimes young boys would be allowed to listen in.
Just about everybody would tell a kid something, you know. There were stories and songs and poetry and all kinds of stuff. Of course, Ham Ferry was one of the local storytellers, and he did more poetry than anything else, but I had known him since I was a little kid, you know, and had heard him in different places reciting poetry and whatever. There used to be a fellow, Ed Solaris, that used to come to the house. It was my mother's cousin. He could sing you a little song or tell you a little story. He was a logger. He used to work for my father. And Eddie Siri was this little French guy, and he used to tell stories. And then there was Donald Hill, who used to tell stories. And there was my Uncle John and my Uncle Jim and I had aunts that told stories. There was just lots of people that told stories. And there was a lot of the Native Americans that used to come around and told stories too. And they'd tell you stories and sang songs.
There used to be a fella that used to come around the countryside. His name was Ara Arish. And Ari Arish was a friend of the family, and he was a friend of everybody. Ari was a nice old gentleman, and he was short and not real stocky, but sort of stocky. And he was the kind of a guy that would come around and split your wood for you or fix this or fix that, and always looking for a little odd job to do or something. And he was a kind of a tall tale teller, and he was always doing funny little things, and he would sit and talk perfectly normal to you, and he would go off onto some rampage and tell the darndest, tallest tales you ever heard in your life, and you could not catch him in a lie, no matter what you tried to do. You couldn't head him off and catch him, and he was so funny. And he used to come to the house, and he would be talking to my father perfectly normal, and I remember one time he stopped at the house, and they were talking about something. He said, "Say, Roy," he says, "you don't suppose I could borrow your wedge, do you?" "Why," Dad says, "sure you can borrow my wedge. What are you going to do? Split some wood?" "No," he said, "actually," he said, "I was making a stew." He said, "but my carrots are so big this year that," he said, "when I was sawing that carrot up with the buck saw," he said, "that darn saw got pinched in that carrot. And now," he said, "I need a wedge the carrot apart so I can get my buck saw back out." He said, "either that or let me borrow your buck saw, one or the other." And so that was the kind of things that Ari would come up with, you know.
Like his father, Bill has been a man of many skills. During his life, he has been a carpenter, milkman, construction worker, and outdoor education teacher. He has also been a hunting and fishing guide, trapper, and fur buyer. As a trapper, he needed good, sturdy pack baskets to carry traps and other paraphernalia. While he learned about basket making as a child when he watched Mohawk loggers make them in the family's woods, he later bought baskets from distant suppliers. They were often inferior to the ones he knew as a boy, and one day he became frustrated with them.
And I told my wife, I said, "I could make those things when I was a kid. I'm going to make some of those." And she said, "Why, you don't know how to make a basket, for God's sake." And I said, "Well, I certainly do." And, of course, I went out and I cut down an ash tree and whaled it and got the material out of it. And I sat out here under the apple tree weaving baskets. It took me a while to get it figured out. It didn't happen in 2 seconds. It was the pounding and all that, I did that without any problem. And that I knew that hell that worked pretty good, but I had an awful time trying to remember that you had to split one of those things and make that work. And I fiddled around, and finally I tore one of the old ones apart. And I said, oh, yeah, there you are. And there was that split piece, you know. And as soon as I saw that, and I remembered, yeah, you had to split one of those things. And then once I did that, it just went right into place. And I sat out there under the apple tree making those things, and people would drive by and said, you're making a basket. And I said, yeah. Suppose I can buy that when you get done with it? And it was just an instant business. It just, all of a sudden, there it was, you know.
That business of making baskets soon developed into other things. He was asked to demonstrate his skill at the Adirondack Museum, the Festival of North Country Folklife, and the Great Camp Sagamore. As he demonstrated, he also told interesting anecdotes about himself and the Adirondack way of life. Soon after, North Country Public Radio in Canton, New York, organized the first in a series of storytelling festivals, and Bill became a fixture. That led to an apprenticeship with Ham Ferry, whom you'll hear more about in a future Meet the Masters program. This apprenticeship, funded by the New York State Council on the Arts, taught Bill how to deliver a good story publicly. In the years since, Bill and his wife Sal have traveled to more places than there is time to count to weave baskets and tell stories. In recent years, Bill has expanded his repertoire by writing some of his own songs based on personal and family experiences.
I've only been writing some of my own stuff, you know, in the last few years, but a lot of the logging songs and that are songs that my father knew, you know. He never could carry a tune or that, but he liked the songs, like the jam and Gary's Rock and that stuff. He liked the, I used to sing a lot of that stuff, you know. And then I got into doing other things. You know, I was a human being just like everybody else, and I had a time when I was a teenager, and my thoughts weren't with the jam on Gary's Rock. It was more like one of Hank Williams' Hey, Hey, Good Looking, or something like that, you know. So there was quite a few years there that I didn't do much singing at all. When my son was small, one time him and I were walking through the woods, and we found the pieces to my mother's old round oak stove right where my father had dumped it out in the woods. And I sat down there on the log with him and explained to him what that old stove meant to me and some of the memories that it brought back from when I was a young person standing around that round oak stove getting warm. When my son was but a lad, one time I took him fishing in a stream up there not far from our old home. As we're walking through the woods, I stubbed my toe on something, and I found it was the door of Ma's old stove. That old round oak stove, it sat there in the parlor, big old wood box sat not far behind. And almost every evening we all would gather round it when the wind was cold and the snow outside was flying. Now Ma got that old stove from the Sisson Lumber Company back when Pa worked up there in the woods. They swapped her that old stove and a bunch of heavy blankets.
While the 200 or so days of performing and demonstrating each year is a far cry from the way he grew up, Bill still stays close to his roots. His songs and stories are filled with the life and characters of Adirondack communities past and present. His new life, however, has made him an accomplished performer, and he has learned to plan a whole program around the different kinds of audiences he is likely to meet.
I generally start off with two or three songs, and that kind of mellows them into whatever, and throw in some stories, and then generally get long toward the end. I put in some pretty good poetry. I like to throw in at least one long piece and a couple of shorter ones, maybe one serious and one humorous. I like to end with some kind of a humorous, either a humorous poem or a humorous song, one the other. I like to leave them with a smile on their face.
And this is the song he'd sing. I don't really know what the name of it is. I call it the Cabbage Head Song, for lack of a better name. Some say that there's a song like it that's called A Sailor's Last Night Home or something like that. Well, I came home the other night, as drunk as I could be. I saw a hat there on the rack where my hat ought to be. I said to my wife, my sweet little wife, my dear little wife is she. Whose hat is that there on the rack where my hat ought to be? Why, she said, you fool, you drunken fool, you blind, you cannot see. Why, that is just a frying pan my father gave to me. Well, I travel near and I travel far, 1,000 miles or more, and a frying pan with a hat band on I never saw before. Well, I came home another time as drunk as I could be, and I saw a horse there in the barn where my horse ought to be. Well, I said to my wife, my sweet little wife, my dear little wife is she. Whose horse is out there in that barn where my horse ought to be? Why, she said, you fool, you drunken fool, you blind, you cannot see. Why, that is just a Jersey cow the neighbors lent to me. Well, I travel near and I travel far, 1,000 miles or more, and a Jersey cow with a saddle on I never saw before. Well, I come home another time as drunk as I could be. I saw some pants there on the chair where my pants ought to be. Well, I said to my wife, my sweet little wife, my dear little wife is she. Whose pants is out there on that chair where my pants ought to be? Why, she said, you fool, you drunken fool, you blind, you cannot see. Why, that is just an oldish tale my sister lent to me. Well, I travel near and I travel far, 1,000 miles or more, and a dish towel with a zipper on I never saw before. Well, I come home another time as drunk as I could be. I saw a head there on the bed where my head ought to be. Well, I said to my wife, my sweet little wife, my dear little wife is she. Whose head is that there on that bed where my head ought to be? Why, she said, you fool, you drunken old fool, you blind, you cannot see. Why, that is just a cabbage head my mother gives to me. Well, I travel near and I travel far, 1,000 miles or more, but a cabbage head with a mustache on I never saw before. Well, I said to my wife, my sweet little wife, my dear little wife is she. I think I'll pack up both me shirts and part your company.
Adirondack storyteller Bill Smith, one of the many people profiled in Meet the Masters, Conversations with Traditional North Country Artists. The series is produced by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York. This program was written and produced by Varick Chittenden and Lamar Bliss. The interview was conducted by Jamie Marrera with audio engineering by Lamar Bliss in the studios of North Country Public Radio, Canton, New York. And I'm your host, Kathleen Fitzgerald. The series is supported by a grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund Community Folklife Program, administered by the Fund for Folk Culture and underwritten by the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Research and field recordings were supported by the Sweetgrass Foundation.